Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, July 21st, 2015. It's 9 a.m. We're at the Palm Coast Community Center for the regularly scheduled meeting of the Palm Coast City Council. For those of you that are able, please rise and join me in a Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Nets.
Here.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nabil.
Here.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you. Before we start our regular agenda, I'd like to take a moment of executive privilege and take this opportunity to thank all the residents of Palm Coast, friends and acquaintances who've sent me cards and letters and emails and phone calls wishing me well. Things are progressing. And I'd like to apologize to the council members and to our residents for my less than appropriate attire. Our dress code calls for business attire. Unfortunately, I haven't figured out how to get an IV pump and a bag through the sleeve of a jacket, so you'll have to bear with my more casual attire. First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the July 7th City Council business meeting and the July 14th City Council workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number two, presentation by Commander Raymond A. Parker, Disabled American Veterans. Commander?
Mr. Mayor, council members, good morning. I am Ray Parker, commander of DAV Chapter 86. Currently, we're down in Flagler Beach is where our headquarters is, but it's part of what I'd like to speak with you about this morning, a little bit pertaining to the background and what we do in our organization. Just for a couple minutes, I'll stay within the agenda. And secondly, just to discuss a relocation that should have all of your interest because we're coming here to Palm Coast. Just some basic facts about our organization. And the statistics which I'm going to be covering are from 2013. They are the official Florida Department of Veteran Affairs statistics that I'll rely upon to share with you. But in 2013, you're probably aware that $30,300,000 is being allocated across this county for veterans and their families. It is one of the functions that we at DAV 86 perform because we represent the entire county. In doing that, there are three organizations that actively, and I'm emphasizing actively, are servicing those veterans and their families. It's DAV 86 ourselves, the VFW right here, and also the organization through the county, the veteran service officers that are over by the courthouse. The DAV and the VFW are volunteer. The salary of the persons over through the county are salaried personnel. What we do in Chapter 86 is we provide professional services to veterans and their families. Now, I'm emphasizing the families. For example, what's transpiring up in Chattanooga right now, where there are families associated of those who lost their lives, if we were there, we would be assisting those families. It's the type of work that we do. We are a nonprofit organization. All of our personnel are volunteer, and 100% of the monies that we have and accrue go back to our veterans. We receive no funding. What we build our activity on or what it's based upon is cash donations through various means, through fundraising, but we do have some minimal revenue income from rental property that we use. I think a lot of you may be aware of the fact that we house the Salvation Army right in our facility. Again, the latest statistics that are official for the county, 2013 statistics indicate that there are 11,480 veterans in this county. Now, recently there's been information that has gone out that has that number a little bit closer unofficially to 15,000 veterans. That's a lot of people here. What we do is we help those veterans at the Disabled American Veterans. We provide VA, Veterans Administration, as well as some other services to those veterans based on their military service. They are earned benefits. We service all branches, Army, Marines, Navy, Air Force, and the Coast Guard. In our chapter, I'll speak to us just specifically in ours, and these are statistics as of the first of this month. We have 593 members, active members in our organization. Again, they're spread across the county. We have two core services and a number of others. I'll mention just those core services first. The primary thing that we do is we provide that service administration and assistance to veterans, helping our veterans and their families understand what they're entitled to, how those benefits are meted out, and how that they can be pursued by our personnel. Secondly, and it's an active function, we provide free transportation to veterans that are entitled to have our services. Again, I say free. We have three vehicles. Two of them officially are from the Veterans Administration. They're allocated to us. They're maintained by the VA and serviced by them. Actually, we have the local Ford organization works on the vehicles, but they're from the VA. The third vehicle will be returning. There's a constant turnover in our vehicles because we drive quite a bit. On average, 50 trips are made per month. It generally takes a full day for a person to travel because we go between Jacksonville, St. Augustine, Daytona Beach, Orlando, and Gainesville. It's a constant round robin that's going around. Some additional services, just before I close here, I think that there's been quite a bit of attention on the homeless veterans in our county. We have been working very, very closely with the Salvation Army. Again, I'll say they're housed right in our facility. It's a very nice process. We move the veterans from our organization. We qualify them directly into the Salvation Army. We provide that service as a screening, sourcing, screening, and selecting for the Salvation Army. We help veterans returning from the service, wherever they are in the world, becoming reemployed, hospital service coordinators, a number of different activities. But our core ones are the service officers, our three service officers, and our transportation. The other part of what I said is that our plan, and it is to be effected at or before the 1st of September, is to relocate our headquarters from Flagler Beach to Palm Coast. Actually, the property is on Palm Florida Park Drive. It is, that's of course, as you know, just east of the whole shopping center complex that's being developed there or redeveloped there, as a matter of fact. We plan to move up there for a specific reason. The nature of our activity is changing. We are spending much more of our time as that service organization. We are not a social organization. We certainly host our people as much as we can, but our primary function is servicing our veterans. I just wanted to bring that to your attention because we are very active in the communities we serve. We have a lot of programs, among other them, Flagler that we used, where we got a lot of help from individuals putting flags out on the beach and in the county. We, for example, sell those and try to get some revenue off of them. I just wanted to mention the fact that we're here. We're going to be seeing a lot more of you, and I hope to see you personally. Thank you.
Commander, thank you very much for your service to our veterans. Certainly an extraordinarily worthwhile endeavor. Agenda item number 3, second reading of an ordinance adopted proposing land development code amendment updating standards for drinking established fences and walls. Interesting combination. Mr. Garganese.
I would agree. An ordinance of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, amending the city's unified land development code in Chapter 3, Zoning, Uses, and Dimensional Standards, Section 3.03.02, Non-Residential and Mixed-Use Districts. Allowable uses including Table 3-4 to update the appropriate zoning classifications for drinking and eating establishments. Amending Chapter 4, Conditions for Limited Specific Uses and Activities, Section 4.01.02, Fences and Walls to modify various standards for fences and walls. Amending Chapter 14, Glossary, Section 14.02, Glossary to delete definitions for club and private club and add definitions for bottle club, civic club, drinking establishment, fence, landscape feature, microbrewery, fast food restaurant, sit-down restaurant, and wall, providing for codification, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, and providing an effective date. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is a second reading of this ordinance. You had a couple of workshops. It's gone through the planning board. We have nothing additional to add. We're prepared to answer questions, but we believe it's ready for final approval.
Council questions? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting to the public. Any from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 3? If so, please come up to the podium, give us your name, and limit your contribution to 3 minutes. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting, come back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Mobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nenes?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 5-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 4, first reading of an ordinance amending Chapter 2, Administration, Article 6, Retirement, Division 2, Volunteer Firefighters, Retirement System and Trust Fund, amending Section 2.54989, Supplemental Benefit. Mr. Reichman, Mr. Garganisi, I'm sorry.
All right. I can get him on the phone if you like. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, amending Chapter 2, Administration, Article 6, Retirement, Division 2, Volunteer Firefighter Retirement System and Trust Fund, amending Section 2-549, Supplemental Benefit of the City of Palm Coast Code of Ordinances, providing for codification, providing for severability of provisions, repealing all ordinances in conflict therewith, and providing an effective date. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Landon.
This should look extremely familiar because you've already approved this, but there, one of the legal documents had an incorrect number. All the other documents had correct numbers, but this one did not get changed, and so this is just readopting the ordinance you approved a few months ago to make that correction. Doesn't change anything with the benefit. It is strictly a correction.
Council questions? Seeing none, open the meeting to the public. And for the public, wish to be heard on this agenda item. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Go back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Mobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor.
Yes. Thank you very much. Agenda item number 5, an ordinance amending the Unified Land Development Code to include height, setback, and distance standards for wireless communication facilities. Mr. Garganisi.
An ordinance of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, amending subsection 3.04.04, Palm Coast Parkway Overlay Zone, Table 3-3, Residential Zoning Districts, Dimensional Standards, Table 3-5, Non-residential and mixed-use zoning districts, dimensional standards in subsection 3.05.02, building setbacks of Chapter 3 of the City's Unified Land Development Code to include height, setback, and distance standards for wireless communication facilities, providing for codification, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, and providing an effective date. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is actually the first reading. You did hear this item at workshop and it's gone through the planning board. You know, we all love our cell phones, and more importantly nowadays, the data it pushes through. But in order to not hate the fact that, can you hear me now, doesn't go on all the time, you have to continue to upgrade our cell towers throughout the community, which is obviously done by private providers. So they have told us that we have some holes and that our code doesn't allow them to fill those holes. So we're trying to still protect our residential areas and the appearance of our community, but also be practical about one of those infrastructure needs in the community. So Constance will walk us through a proposed change to try to help make that happen.
Good morning, Mayor and council members.
Good morning.
The reason why we're here today presenting these changes is because there is a greater demand for wireless service. There's an increase in expectation, and our devices have become faster and more in demand. As we become a paperless society, I would say we become dependent on these services as a business community and residents alike. The city's been confronted with wireless providers asking to be able to provide cell towers in areas where we have gaps. And as the city trying to demonstrate a business-friendly atmosphere, we tried to work with them on locations where they could place towers. As part of the process for placing towers, they have to provide justification and need for those areas. Also, staff has noticed that there aren't any standards from residences, so we'd like to include setback standards from residences as well. In the justification letters, reports such as these are given to our city consultants for cell towers. This particular one has gone through our consultant, and they agree with the justification. The red and yellow areas, in the red and yellow areas, are areas with optimal signal strength, and the green and blue areas are not optimal. The target service areas that most wireless providers talk to us about is this area here along Palm Coast Parkway and our business communities. And there's also residence communities that would benefit by having that signal strength in this area as well. This particular demonstration is for indoor signal strength, and this report is for outdoor signal strength. And again, the red and yellow, which is a little hard to see on here, but this is the outline of the yellow is optimal, and the green and blue areas are less optimal. Cell towers are already allowed in the city. We're not, denying that we already allow the use. And those uses are governed by our land development code and our code of ordinances. When placing a cell tower, they would not be able to just place a cell tower anywhere along Palm Coast Parkway. There is a hierarchy that they would need to follow. The first properties that they would need to look at would be city-owned property. Then, with justification, they could go to the next step of publicly owned property and then to privately owned property. So they have to go through this hierarchy to place the tower, plus provide those justification reports in order to place a tower along Palm Coast Parkway or anywhere else in the city. These regulations are governed throughout the whole city. What we're looking at amending today would be our Palm Coast Parkway overlay zone, which limits the height of communication towers to 50 feet, and also provide setback requirements, distances from residences. This map demonstrates our overlay zone, our Palm Coast Parkway overlay zone, the areas inside of the dark black boundary lines is the areas where they are limited to the 50-foot heights. And the areas outside the black boundary lines are allowed to have 150-foot heights today. So the ordinance is, again, to remove the height restriction for communication towers. The setbacks for communication towers are governed by the setbacks of the zoning district in which they are in. So regardless of what the setback is in that zoning district, it would be no less than 10 feet. Also establish a distance from Palm Coast Parkway, Belterre Parkway, and Old Kings Road of 150 feet from those right-of-ways, 150 feet from residential zoning districts, and 150 feet from any residential dwelling. Should those standards be applied in the overlay zone, the areas in blue are your setback areas, and a tower would not be allowed to be placed in those areas. The areas outside of the overlay zone are also allowed to have towers. We're not changing the ordinance in that respect citywide. So what we're looking at is the height restriction within the overlay zone. This item was brought before the planning board on July 15th, and it was recommended by a 6-0 vote that City Council approve the ordinance. And that completes my presentation.
Council questions?
Your Honor.
Mr. McGuire.
Constance, back in the beginning of your presentation where you had the color-coded strength map, if you will, the one that the blue, go back even further. Keep going.
Whoops. I don't know what.
No, it's a.
It lost its way.
It's right in the opening part of your presentation.
Where did it go?
I think what she's saying, that's it, but the map part
disappeared.
There we go. There you go. Okay.
Okay. We're back.
Two questions. What's the source? Where did this map come from?
When a wireless provider comes to the city wanting to provide service, they have to generate a justification report that we submit to the city's consultant, and that's where this came from, one of the providers that wants to place the cell tower. And our consultants did review this document, and they agree with the report.
Okay, if my second question is, if the city council approves this change, are we going to see 6 months down the road a new color-coded map showing how service has been improved?
If there's new placement of towers, right, this is pretty current. This was done a few months ago.
Right, but if you place new towers, then the red zone ought to get bigger, shouldn't it?
That's correct. That's
are
a fill in the gaps.
Are we going to be able to see that, the results of what we do?
In the next justification report, when somebody comes in to place a tower, and if they choose to place it in that area, it would demonstrate all existing towers and the signal strengths that are provided at that time.
I understand that, Constance. Mm-hmm. My only question is, if new towers are put up and they're taller and they conform to all of the things that we're going to vote on today, what's that map going to look like 6 months or a year from now?
The towers that are existing, and we did check, are 150 feet now, and that's the service we're getting from those.
Let me help a little bit. I think, Mr. McGuire, what you're asking is, after the tower goes up, we don't go back to the cell tower provider and say, okay, now you have to show us what impact this had. It would what we do require is that when the next one comes in, that it would show that impact. To answer your question as to what it's going to look like, if someone could put the cursor approximately where Palm Coast Parkway and crosses about right there, in other words, right in the middle of the blue, will be a big red splotch, because okay. That's where they're proposing a tower.
So the assumption is those other red blotches at the center of the blotch is a tower.
Yes, that's exactly what, you know.
So we would see one of those.
We'd see a red blotch right there in the blue. It's in essence what you're going to see. And then, of course, the yellow that turns into green, et cetera. So most of the blue between in that box, that square box, mm-hmm. will go away. It will turn into red, green, and yellow.
Okay.
I know the answer to my question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If you look down at State Road 100, you have very, very poor signal strength.
Yes.
Why are the providers not putting a tower down there?
We do have wireless providers approaching us for those areas as well. They haven't gone as far as actually submitting reports and things of that nature. But it's anywhere in the city where we have gaps, we are being approached.
You're going to see more. Now, some of these you won't have to see because outside of the Palm Coast Parkway corridor, we allow 150 feet. Also, we always encourage them to put their antennas on existing tower. That's actually part of our ordinance if it is in their gap area. It's one of the reasons why we require justification, because we would rather multiple antennas go on one tower versus multiple towers.
But right now, it looks like the new City Hall is a dead zone.
For this provider in particular, every provider is going to be different, but this particular, in other words, the reports are generated by that particular divided, yes, and I don't know what source this is and if that's out of their study area, because you start getting out of their study area too, but I know State Road 100, I get a good signal, but I've got family members that don't, so it all depends on who the provider is.
Ultimately, I think the deciding factor for the provider is profit margin. If they've got customers, they'll put towers. If they don't, they won't.
I think all of us have dropped a provider when we don't get the service we want. And so their goal is to not have you drop them.
Other council questions?
One question. Oh, I'm sorry.
Outside of the overlay area, what's the distance to residents?
Today, it's based on the zoning district and the setback of the zoning district, so we're adding a distance requirement to this amendment of 150 feet from the residential zone property as well as any residential dwelling.
That's inside and outside of the overlay?
Citywide.
Citywide.
Mm-hmm. Good. That makes sense.
Currently, it would just be whatever that zoning district is, which means the most would be probably 50 feet less than.
Some cases 35.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So this, we feel like, you know, it's doesn't need to be right in their backyard. At least 150 feet seems reasonable.
My only concern about that would be that you, in some areas of the city, you could not find a spot to put one. But at least with this carrier, it seems like their coverage is in. There's a lot of commercial down in the other southern end that would make it work.
I think, you know, we like to see them in public places like parks and schools and those type of things. You can easily keep them 150 feet away from a resident.
Mr. Navio.
In the dimensional standards non-residential chart, what does the NA imply? If there are no standards or...
Yeah.
Say again?
Not applicable.
Yes, but what does that mean? The standard, there are no standards?
It's
so like for MPD?
MPD would be, you know, that it's not applicable because typically an MPD, a master plan development, is an ordinance in its own with a specific development agreement with dimensional standards. So if we brought, for example, you know, we had Discovery Village was a master plan development. Within that agreement that council would adopt, it has those dimensional standards set in that agreement. So that's what we would go by, the master plan development agreement, not the code.
Other council questions?
Yeah.
Seeing none, we'll open the meeting to the public. Any from the public wish to be heard on this agenda item?
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. The only thing that I see it with this, particularly in that corridor there, is what will these towers look like? And I say that because sometimes they are just gross. Now, if somehow or another you come, you have an agreement with these people, please, please tell them, disguise it in some way or another, but not that big thing going up with this over here and that, you know, make it a little bit nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, George Mayo. Glad to see you back, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, sir.
In regards to the question just there, that was going to be one of my questions. There were cell towers when I lived in Connecticut that were in the shape of huge pine trees. Also, they disguised them as large flagpoles. So that could be something you might want to look at. Just to clear up on the map there or whatever, you had 150-foot setbacks from Palm Coast Parkway and Belterre Parkway. I would like to see legally you also, south of 100, it becomes Belterre Boulevard. So just if you want to have those same setbacks, you might want to have that in your rules there. Belterre Boulevard is different. And also, since I live south of 100 over in the Z section, yes, the cell phone service is very poor, and I would hope maybe we can look into that and advance that and get some better cell service. And I know the airport might be a problem with the height of it, but I think something can be worked out. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. So no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion, we'll get back to council. But first, I've seen disguised cell towers. What my least favorite is the traditional tower, which is looks like a skinny Eiffel Tower with things sticking out all over. That is about as ugly as they can make them. We've done the flagpole. There are several here in the city already. My understanding is that the nature of the current transmission equipment won't fit into a flagpole. I'm not a huge fan of those artificial pine trees.
I've never seen those.
They're really strange looking. Maybe if they were in the middle of the Redwood National Forest, they might blend in. But
Mayor, let me
tell us what the appearance might be.
This is the ordinance change. As soon as this process is concluded, if you adopt this, then the cell tower company will come in and actually propose a lease agreement on city property is what we're hoping. At that time is when we will actually present each specific project to city council and what the tower will look like. Historically, we've done flagpoles. You see them in our parks, that is still our standard. Any way you look at it, it's going to be what they call a monopole, monolithic pole. In other words, it will be a single pole. The trees we've looked into, providers like those because it does provide them with more options with their antennas. But I've also heard horror stories of the branches falling off just like any tree, and that's not a good thing. So we're probably not going to do a tree. May not be a flagpole, but there are many options out there. We'll find something that will work for the provider and also not be a big, ugly tower. If I could go on to the other question, I think the idea of Belterre Parkway / Boulevard is a very good suggestion. We can make that change in the second reading if City Council agrees. And then we also are put together a team to help try to recruit more cell phone providers in certain areas. And actually, we have space on some of our existing towers and actually go out and market those because we know we have some dead spots and would like to see if we can't get more providers in here. The fact of it is it's not just how far away from the tower you are. It also has to do with how much business or service is going through those antennas. And as we get more and more data being pushed through them, their coverage area actually shrinks. So lots of times you'll see it between 5 and 6 o'clock in the evening, and as everybody's going home and calling saying, pick up the milk, you'll have places that become dead that aren't dead otherwise. And so it's those kind of factors that we're trying to educate ourselves a little more and work with providers to help provide better coverage. This particular ordinance is one of the things that we need in the tool chest, if you will, to help make that happen.
You know, on the one hand, there's the aesthetics of these towers. No matter what you make them look like, they're not the prettiest thing in the world. But to me, there's an issue of public safety here also. More and more individuals are getting rid of their hardwired landline phones and are depending solely on wireless. The last thing you want in case of an emergency is not to be able to communicate. So I think this is the wave of the future. This is where we're heading. I think it was on the news this morning or yesterday evening, they did a survey. The average citizen of the United States spends 3 hours a day looking at their smartphone.
Yeah.
It's a tremendous amount of time. Additional council questions?
No.
Otherwise, is there a motion on this agenda item?
Move approval of agenda item number 5, an ordinance amending the Unified Land Development Code to include height, setback, and distance standards for wireless communication facilities.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Ness?
Yes. Thank you very much. Agenda item number 6, resolution to establish the proposed maximum millage rate for fiscal year 2016 and set the first public hearing date for the budget. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is part of many steps in the budget process. You've heard this presentation at your workshop, but this is your first actual formal action you have to take, and that is, it doesn't set the millage rate, but it sets a ceiling, it sets a maximum. Chris and Lena will take it from here.
Good morning, everyone. This again is our just a quick look at our budget preparation timeline. We've been working at it since January, and basically it goes right through the end of the calendar year. Right now, of course, we're in July, and we're at the adopt the maximum millage rate step in our process. This is a just kind of a brief overview of the preliminary general fund budget that we talked about at the City Council workshop last week. We'll be going in much greater detail a week from today. Basically, the core general fund expenses, we expect to go up about 2% from fiscal year 15. Also, there's 4.5 full-time equivalent positions proposed. At the very bottom is our 2015 budget versus the estimate. The estimate's coming in a little higher. One of the reasons, of course, is our FEMA grant that we received, which we talked about at the last workshop. This, again, is just a quick look at the history of property taxes from our peak in 2008 through 2015. We had a period of 4 years where we were relatively flat. Our peak in 2008 was a little over $20 million in property taxes collected, and we'll be at about $16 million for the current fiscal year. We spent quite a bit of time looking at how we compare with other cities. Of course, Palm Coast has the second lowest millage rate of cities in our population range, and that's statewide, and we're one of the few cities that do not levy a public service tax or utility tax. Again, another look at our millage rate history, as well as the taxable values. You can see through 2015, our taxable values is about 44% less than what they were in 2008 at the peak. And we're collecting a little over 20% less in property taxes than at the peak. Fiscal year 16 taxable value is just over $4.1 billion, which represents a 6.42% increase over fiscal year 15. About $67 million of that, $63 or $67 million, is new construction portion. These are the millage rate options that are available to City Council. Again, this is dictated by state statutes. Our 2014 or 15 millage rate was 4.2450. The rollback rate, a little under 4.06. Then a majority vote and two-thirds vote rates. Again, these are dictated by the state process as to the level that City Council can go up just by different versions of vote. This is a quick chart of taxes generated. The very top section is our 2015 taxes generated and how they're allocated between the stormwater and general fund. 2016 in the middle at the rollback rate, and on the bottom is at the proposed trim rate or maximum millage rate. We would generate about $1 million more in property taxes, assuming that the maximum millage rate stayed as the final millage rate. At this point, we're proposing the maximum to be last year's millage rate, 4.2450. This allows City Council some maneuvering room for the upcoming discussions on the general fund. And as always, we continue to refine the budgets to work that down as we can. But again, this would be what would go out on the trim notices. I went ahead and I did a survey of a number of homesteaded properties, actually pretty much everybody in this room that lives in Palm Coast. And the taxable values, and anyone can do this, they can go to the Flagler Property Appraisers website and look at the taxable value last year versus what's proposed for this year. And the taxable values on homesteaded homes have risen about 1 to 1.2%. The taxable value on my house is about $88,000 or $89,000, which is actually pretty close to the median taxable value of a homesteaded home in Palm Coast. And my taxes would go up, at this rate, would go up about $5 for the year if we were to adopt the 4.2450 rate. So, again, it really depends on your home, what your taxable value is. But the you're looking at about a 1.2% increase, and like I said, on the median home, it's about $5 per year. So what's next? We will be digging into the details of the general fund budget at the next workshop a week from today. Then in August, we'll go through the rest of the funds with the final proposed budget presentation at the end of August to City Council at a workshop. The first public hearing would be Wednesday, September 9th at 5:05 p.m., would actually be in this room.
That it?
And that's it.
Council questions. Mr. McGuire.
Chris, if the council adopts a 4.2450 rate based upon what the property appraiser estimates the revenue, if you will, to be, and based upon what you're proposing for our budget, what will that end up looking like at the end of the fiscal year if all those numbers prove to be true? Will we generate a reserve?
It's hard for me to actually answer that question yet because we're not done with the budget.
I understand.
We still have those discussions. Currently, there's somewhere in the area of $300,000 unallocated if we were to use the 4.2450 as our final millage rate. So that would potentially go into the reserves.
Okay. All right.
We typically don't budget for an amount to go into reserves unless we need to replenish the reserves.
I understand that, but we're going to set a maximum millage rate.
Right.
And so the danger here is that we set a maximum millage rate and come up without enough money to run the city. I want you to make me feel warm and fuzzy that won't happen.
That's always possible, but when we do this, when we look at this, we look at and propose a millage rate that covers all the anticipated expenditures that we have right now in the budget and also leaves some flexibility for City Council to make additional changes.
Well said. Thank you.
And Chris, has it ever happened that we did have not enough with the term rate, that we needed more than what we actually put in there for?
You're asking an accountant if he wants more money.
Not if you want it, and
the answer is yes. No, we really haven't been in that position, thankfully. We spend a lot of time working through this and working with City Council on the proposals. We have not been in that position where the maximum millage rate really hasn't been sufficient for the governmental expenses.
I can just add to that if we do set the City Council does set the millage rate at our current rate, which is what we're proposing in trim rate, we will be fine for next year. There won't be any problems. It doesn't leave a lot for any new programs, but it does leave some if you want to add some new programs as you go through this process. But very comfortable with this being the maximum. We are far enough along to have a good comfort level, give you the warm fuzzy that this will not be a problem. Traditionally, we will be able to actually come in lower than the trim rate.
To Ms. Shipley's question, one of the things that stands in our favor is that over the years, city staff has done some very good analytics. We know we have a multi-year projection for transportation, bridges, weirs, stormwater. We've factored all that in, so it's not like you're starting from scratch and say, oops, we've got a plan for these major capital projects. So that allows you to do better fiscal planning, which is tribute to staff. I mean, if you look at our long-term we're going to design a bridge this year, we're going to rehab it next year, we're going to design a bridge, and the same thing with our weirs. Everything has been rated, and absent a major catastrophe, we're in good shape. Mr. DiLorenzo.
Chris and Lena, are we meeting all our fund balance policies at this time, or otherwise known as reserve policies at this time?
Yes, we are.
Yep. So is that why we don't need to budget for reserves, because we already have those reserves in place?
That's correct. That's correct. If we were to have reserve deficiencies, now would be the time we would try to address them.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
The one reserve that always makes me a little nervous is our disaster reserve. You watch television, and weather-related disasters are becoming more and more and more and more frequent. And, you know, it's an interesting balance. I'd love to have more money in a disaster reserve, because you can't imagine the impact a significant disaster could have. On the other hand, you hate to just squirrel money away and let it sit there, not doing any good. So just keep our fingers crossed. We don't need any direct hurricane hits. We don't need any bridge washouts. We don't need any of the stuff that you're seeing on television.
Mr. Mayor, we have done some research on that since our discussions last year, polled other cities and other governmental organizations on how they handle their disaster reserve. We will be bringing that information forward when we discuss the disaster reserve fund in a couple of weeks.
Good. That's the one that makes all the difference in the world when a disaster strikes. Other council questions?
Question. Chris, where do we stand on the rollback? Are we in a good position if we were to stay at the rollback?
The current proposed budget is above rollback rate by, you know, somewhere in a $600,000 range, the current proposed general fund budget.
And the current, that 4.2 rate puts us about $300,000 above the current rate in there.
Right.
See, I'm on the philosophy opposite of you as an accountant. I'm sitting there going, well, instead of looking for more money, maybe we could look for ways of staying at the rollback rate and adjusting where we're spending.
Of course, that's always an option.
Yeah.
Right. The maximum millage rate, proposed rate, is just our cap.
I know, but it's like this. I can throw you in the water to teach you to swim, and you'll try harder than if I threw you in with a life preserver. You know what I mean? So I'd rather see you really try. So, but, I, you know.
But on the other hand, I would hate to throw us in and have the guy sink.
Some in, some out.
Well, I think the just from a general general fund discussion, really with all the funds, is that they're built to provide the service levels that have currently been dictated through City Council and through our strategic action plan. Hey, this is what we want to provide. So we've went ahead and we've prepared the budgets to meet that, you know, kind of that initial direction. So certainly any and all discussions can be had about, what changes can we make, what other things can we do. That's part of the reason for the, you know, the individual workshops on individual funds. Yeah. So, we can certainly look at all of that stuff as we go forward.
I don't want to look at cutting services. But I do want to look at making sure we're maximizing our dollars efficiency, you know, in those services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
And to Mr. Nabil's point, which is well taken, just because you set the maximum millage rate at whatever it is doesn't mean that you've got a blank check to spend it.
That's
we
correct.
Expect you to exercise fiscal conservatism whenever you're able to do so. It would be good to say if you set the maximum millage rate at this, but you could come in at the rollback rate.
Yeah.
Certainly, it'd be a feather in your cap.
All of those things are possible. I can't sit here and tell you that they're not possible without service cuts, though. So the budgets were developed to meet the existing service standards, and we're always looking at efficiencies and things of that nature. But
and because you're always looking at efficiencies, it's reasonable to expect that you could bring the expenditures in at less than the maximum millage rate.
We always try.
What else can you do?
We always try, yep.
Other council questions? Open the meeting to the public. If in the public wish to be heard on this item, which is setting, depending on your point of view, it's either the worst case scenario or the best case scenario for the 2016 fiscal year taxes. So you don't approach the podium, we'll close the public portion, we can go back to council. Mr. Garganisi, I'm going to need your guidance here. Is there some specific verbiage that I must read at this point, or do we just adopt this as a resolution?
No, there's no specific announcement other than, you know, give direction on the proposed millage for trim purposes.
Just from a public standpoint, it's good to make the announcement. I'll do it right now. That our first public hearing on the budget will be in this room September 9th at 5:05 p.m. And you are actually setting that date as part of this resolution.
So it's a two-part resolution. We're setting the first public budget hearing for September 9th, 5:05 p.m., and we're setting the maximum trim rate at, repeat the number?
4.2450.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, also, just as an FYI for the public, all of these presentations, of course, are out on the city website, you know, and the access to the presentations as well as any of the council deliberations that are recorded at workshops, of course, are available on the city website. People can't make the meetings.
Very good. And as always, every council member is available, telephone, email, whatever, for any input that the residents might want to offer. The input that doesn't do us a lot of good is I want more services and I want lower taxes. But that aside. We are on this agenda item. Is there a motion to approve the agenda item setting the first budget hearing at September 9th, 5:05 p.m., and the trim rate at 4.2450?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the consent agenda item. The consent agenda items, items 7 through 10, are items that the council can act on as a group, but I'd like to offer the opportunity to the public if anyone would like to offer comments on any of the items 7 through 10 before council adopts them. This is your opportunity. This is just relating to the consent agenda items. Anybody wish to speak on any of the consent agenda items? So you don't approach the podium. We'll come back to council. Consent agenda items 7 through 10. Council, do you wish to remove anything from the consent agenda?
No, thank you.
If not, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Oh, let's see. Other business. I guess we need to announce the cancellation of the public hearing scheduled for Palm Coast Community Center on September 1st for the South Old Kings Road Development of Regional Impact. That meeting has been canceled until further notice by the applicant. And that brings us to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on any item not on today's agenda. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, come up to the podium, give us your name, and limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. It is a pleasure to see you sitting right there, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Keep getting well. Take care of yourself. Thank you.
Got some great doctors and a great wife who are helping me through this, so it makes it a little bit easier. Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Mr. Best. I have a question about the policy and procedure for vehicles that's not operational being parked in the driveway that's rusty. And I looked at the policy and procedure for Palm Coast. It said that the code enforcement office cannot take action because the vehicle is parked up against the garage. But it's not operational. It's a rusty vehicle. And to me, it's bringing down the community. So what are the other options available to take the appropriate action to eliminate that problem?
we'll get an answer for your question. We'll get an explanation and an answer.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Next speaker.
Good morning. My name's Henry Florio. I'm here to find out about a tree that I'd like to have removed on a property next to my house. It's a vacant property. The tree is a live tree, but it's threatening my property, and it could fall on my house. Now, I was told by the city arborist, or the certified arborist, John Boudet, that it couldn't be taken down because it's a live tree, and that the only way it'd be taken down is if there was a permit issued to clear the lot. Now, Mr. Jim Landon has emailed me and said that I could get in contact with the property owner to get permission to have the tree taken down. If I do this, according to what Mr. Boudet said, that it would be in violation because there's no permit issued to take the tree down. So there's a conflict here on, you know, whether the tree can be taken down, can't be taken down, with or without a permit, with or without permission, with the city involved or not. This is a public safety thing. Now, he just mentioned about a cell tower shaped like a pine tree that he didn't want to see falling branches. I don't want to see a falling tree on my house. That's all I have. Somebody's got to be responsible.
Thank you, sir. We'll get some comment on that for you. Next speaker. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting and come back to council. But first, the issue of an inoperable vehicle and code enforcement and the constraints that are upon us. Mr. Landon, do you feel comfortable talking
yes,
about that?
Yes, absolutely. It's very both of these issues today are very common. We deal with them all the time. The issue of the vehicle is having proof that it's inoperable. Why you hear that, well, when people back their vehicle up to the garage is because at this point we can't tell whether it has a valid tag that hasn't expired. Because in Florida you don't have a tag on your front bumper, so people take away our evidence, and without having that evidence, we can't make them remove their vehicle because we don't know whether it's operable or not. And we can't take action against it unless we actually have that proof. If it is on blocks, on jacks, we see the engine next to it in the driveway, those type of things give us the proof we need that it's inoperable. If it has flat tires, any of that kind of evidence would allow us to tag it. But if you look at it and it looks like you can drive it, and we have no reason to know that they can't drive it, then we cannot take any action against that vehicle. Is
the only thing on. I think you should add that the reason we can't go check the tag because we cannot get on the property.
Right, we can't trespass any more than anybody else can trespass type thing. I will tell you that we have some other experts in the back that can help. Help explain this a little further as to if there is anything that we can do. Steve, if you'll get with the gentleman and answer any more questions he may have on that. Tree?
Okay, let's go to the tree.
Trees is very common. The issue here is that the tree is on private property. This is like you have a dog in the yard next to you that you don't like. So you call the city and say, I don't like that dog next to me. I'm uncomfortable with it. As long as that dog is constrained and meets the criteria, we can't make that property owner get rid of their dog. The same thing is be true with anything on private property. If the tree is not a hazardous or dangerous tree, we can't go to that property owner and say, your neighbor wants the tree removed from your property, therefore you have to cut it down. We don't have that legal right. We've had two arborists take a look at this tree. Both of them would, have determined that it does not meet the criteria to have the tree come down. The confusion about the permit or no permit, any tree that's taken down in Palm Coast, you are required to get a permit to have it come down. So, yes, if the in this case, the tree can come down with a permit. So if the property owner wants the tree to come down or agrees to have the tree come down, then they would need to get a permit, but that permit would be easy to obtain.
And I believe there's no cost for a tree removal permit.
That is correct.
But now I'm in the exact same situation. Exactly.
Okay.
I have a tree big. It's right on the border of the property behind me, which is an empty lot. It's vine covered, and it's about 40 feet tall, but it's covered with vines, and it's doing one of these, and my house is over here. So I called the owner, and I said, look, I need your permission to take this tree down. And he actually offered to pay for it. And I said, well, let's split it, because it's my annoyance, it's your tree. Okay, so we got a tree guy, you know, and he said, wait, I got to go and get the permit. And they refused the permit. Literally said, exactly what this gentleman said. The tree is alive, you can't cut it down. Yeah. Exact words. So I looked at him, and I said, this is going to be a problem one day for the city when okay. that tree comes down.
And I don't have the right people to, but you should, if and you have minimum number of trees, I will look into
it. It's a lot. We're like, yeah. I don't know, 4,000 trees on it.
Should not be a problem as long as you get the permit.
I'd like to look into this because we know that for a developed lot, there is a certain number of trees based on the square footage of the lot. And you can remove a tree as long as you meet the minimum standards. I'd be curious to see what the minimum standards are for an undeveloped lot.
Yes.
As Mr. Nobile says, and as the other gentleman said, if there's 20 trees on the lot, you've probably got more trees than you're ever going to need.
Right. But it's not I don't like that tree. It's... This tree is leaning, this is a big tree, and it's leaning towards my house. And that's exactly what I heard from the other gentleman. And I'm like, okay, so it's a little bit more than just how many trees are there. It's, okay, this one could... I was just very surprised when we went through that whole process, and I was told exactly those words, that the tree can't come down because it's alive.
Well, we will. I will look into this, and
next workshop, Ms. Minnie can.
Should
be there.
No, she's she just had a baby.
Ooh, my goodness, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, This is code enforcement okay. issue. This is more than
well,
just urban forestry.
Let's look at it because I think it's a legitimate
absolutely.
Issue.
Absolutely, there is no reason why on a vacant lot. Now, clearing the lot is a different story.
That's a whole different story.
Yeah. But taking down one tree, so there's got to be more of that story because I'm very confident we can take that.
Because in our fire mitigation ordinance, certain vegetation within 15 foot or 10 foot of the property line can be removed, whether it's healthy or not. So let's look at that at a workshop.
But that would not include trees, just for the record. But, yes, we will definitely get an answer.
Okay.
I do want to stress, though, the city, unless it meets certain criteria, cannot force a property owner to remove something from their property.
Right.
Whether it's a tree or something else is the point.
And that's not the issue here. Both of us got permission.
If you get permission, and then that's a different issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Discussion by city council of matters not on the agenda. Mr. McGuire, start with you, sir.
Where do we stand with our contract with Buxton? When will they come on board?
I don't have an update.
Soon?
Yes, I mean, it's in the works. It's but, I mean, they do a lot of background in the office kind of work.
Do you think, Mr. Landon, that our discussion about cell towers would be something that they might weigh in on in terms of what you should have and where you should have it?
They may, but I doubt it because it's a specialty item, you know, where it's more of a technical issue as to where coverage is and is not, and I don't think that's a Buxton type expertise.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it. Mr. Nobile.
I have nothing.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Shipley. Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
No, sir.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
Just a couple of...
Food truck tonight.
Yes.
Food truck Tuesday tonight.
5 to 8 at Central Park in our downtown town center area. It's recreation month, so we have a number of activities at the pool. This Saturday at 8 a.m., starting at Linear Park, is our annual Palm Coast, Detour of Palm Coast, a bike ride that then this year will take us to Waterfront Park, where we will dedicate additional great blue heron sculptures. If you've, everybody that's been out there have seen those, and there's new ones out there that will be dedicated this Saturday at 8:30. So if people can get out, those are really quite fascinating, excellent little addition that's been donated to us. Last thing I have is something new that is indicative of a lot of the activities out there in the community. Is, I think I'm going to call it, and maybe the name will stick, is Ray's Friday Update. Oftentimes you all hear rumors or you hear activities going on in the development world, new commercial, et cetera. The mayor has asked to see if we couldn't give city council a little heads up so that you all hear about it before maybe you read about it in the newspaper. Challenges with that is twofold. One of them is sometimes we're just spreading rumors because they're just kicking tires. And so when someone kicks tires and doesn't care whether we tell other people they're kicking tires, it may never happen. So you never can tell whether or not they will actually be able to land the deal. The other is, on the other side, is many times, particularly in the retail business, they specifically say they don't want us to make any announcements until it's a formal application because they don't like their competition to know what they're up to. So in that case, we will honor that until they do submit something formal and something that's public. But Ray has started putting together kind of things that are happening. Main reason is because we're seeing so much activity, it's hard to keep up. I'm asking, what happened here? And he's got a lot, not just him, but the whole planning and building department. This is in addition to, if you look in our weekend review under community development, those are the official applications and permits issued. This will be a little different. This is kind of the items that have not been submitted formally. When they get submitted formally, we add them to our formal list, and that's in the weekend.
And this is the report you're talking about we got last week, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And you'll get it every Friday. Once a week, there'll be times when there's no activity, and sometimes it will be an update on something that you got earlier. Just kind of wanted to announce that. It's kind of exciting, a lot of things we got going on right now. Mayor, with that, that's all I would, that's all I have.
Thank you. Mr. Vice Mayor?
Move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.